A Pod Forte Podcast.
The next CMO podcast explores topics that are on the minds of forward-thinking marketing executives, from leadership and strategy to emerging technologies. And we bring these topics to life by interviewing leading experts in their fields. The Next CMO is sponsored by Planful for Marketing, a leading marketing performance management solution that automates marketing planning, financial management, and ROI optimization. And hosted by me, Peter Mahoney, an experienced CMO, CEO, board member, and executive advisor. In this special episode of the Next CMO podcast, I'm joined by Scott Todaro, my co-founder at Plana and architect of the Next CMO, and Rowan Tonkin, the CMO of Planful. And I do something different this time. I'm going to hand over the host microphone to Rowan, and he's going to interview me and Scott about the origin of Plana and the Next CMO. I'm sure you'll enjoy this special show. Hey, Scott and Rowan, welcome to the Next CMO podcast and this super special episode. And we're going to do something different in this particular episode. And I'm going to hand the baton over to Rowan, and he's actually going to interview me and Scott. So Rowan, take it over. You've got the controls of the Next CMO.
Thanks, Peter. An honor. Glad to be back on the Next CMO, and this time as the host of a conversation. So I don't know about the folks listening, but I've always wanted to hear the story of how the Next CMO came about and how Plana came about. I've obviously spent a lot of time working with Peter and Scott recently, and hearing about this, I think it's a story that needs to be shared more widely. So I asked Peter, hey, can I take over the Next CMO so I can interview the founders of the Next CMO? And that's what we're here to do today. So Scott, welcome. Have you ever been on the Next CMO as a guest? Has Peter ever interviewed you?
Yeah, a couple of times.
Good.
Yeah, I've been on.
Scott was just saying that it's been a long time, and I think he's a little put out by that for some reason.
Yeah. He might have been on a little ban. You know, we've been put in the naughty corner. So.
Yeah, I know. Everybody's looking for glory. Anyways, all right. It's good. Don't worry. I'm fine with it. It's okay.
All right, so let's talk starting about how the idea and the inception of the idea to create a platform for marketers, which became the Plana brand in the end. I know, Peter, we've got a little story to tell about the actual name, but how did that opportunity, A, come about and the idea come about?
Well, I had been in a role for many years where I was the CMO of a pretty big company, a couple billion-dollar public software company. And we'd done lots and lots of acquisitions. We did 100 while I was there. And I kept seeing the same kind of pain and suffering. And for a long time, I thought it was just me. And the broad idea of the pain was it was really difficult for people to one, stay on track. No one even had a plan or really a good coherent plan. And then staying on track and really being able to optimize their plan based on the return on investment of the specific investments that were delivering the best results was everyone's pipe dream that never seemed to be happening. And we just seemed like a million miles away. And I'll tell you, there was this one moment that really kind of pushed me over the edge. And I had this theory that we were just chaotically doing marketing and what we now call random acts of marketing. And I walked over to the office of this young woman who was running a pretty big part of the plan because it was more of a kind of a direct-to-consumer business. She was spending, I don't know, $10 million a year or something like that. So real money. And I was trying to figure out what the return was on a specific event that we spent a fair amount of money on. And so I went up to her office and said, hey, Amy, can you give me a sense of what we spent on this event and what the return was? And she said, well, let me just pull up my list. And she pulls up this spreadsheet and it's this like random list of stuff. And she said, well, if I add up this line and that line, I said, well, it doesn't even include this other stuff. And I looked at the thing more closely and I realized that literally it was just this list of stuff. And I said, what is this? And she said, well, it's my plan. And this plan was literally this random list of stuff that she was working on. And I thought, wow, she must have the world's worst CMO. And I said, oh my God, that's me. So I saw that there was this fundamental problem. And I started looking more and I kept seeing that people had sort of declared bankruptcy on maintaining a solid plan. And it was really rare for people to have a really tight plan and almost non-existent for people to be able to measure it. So one of the first people that I called is I called Scott, because Scott and I had worked together for many years and been close friends. And Scott was the guy who always was sort of the guy who had a process and a template and a standard for everything. If I needed the best approved standard process, I'd call Scott. And what we ended up having lunch together at Seasons 52 in Burlington. And I told him a little bit about this idea. And he likes to say that I had him at hello and he was like jumping over the table with excitement saying, oh my God, we got to fix this. This is a huge issue and I'm all in. So that's how we all started.
Awesome. Scott, is that how you recall that lunch happening?
100%. That's exactly how it happened. Yeah, actually that lunch that we had, I think we filled about 6 napkins full of ideas that we had to build into the product. But it was very exciting because, honestly, marketers need a lot of help. There's no one set way to plan. And if you look at a lot of the other, functions inside a business, so guardrails to how to approach planning, but there really aren't in marketing. And so it was a huge opportunity for us to really help and shape the industry.
Yeah. So I want to step back a little bit, ignoring some of the product concepts. I think that might be another podcast on some product-led growth, podcast. But this podcast, I want to talk about the marketing strategy really behind Planner. So as someone in this industry, B2B software, we see a lot of marketing technology. And what brought me to Planner was all of the great content. And so I want to unpack that a little bit. So how did the idea to lead with the content strategy and be almost content first? I heard more about the content than I did about the product originally, a la kind of HubSpot. For years, I thought HubSpot was like a media company and didn't realize it had software. How did that idea come about?
Well, in the beginning, so we should talk about the beginning, because the beginning, even before Scott was here full time, right? In the beginning, we had no money. Right. So we had to figure out how do we engage with the audience in a reasonable way. I've always been this big fan, and Scott's been a big advocate for the idea of kind of building, engaging a community. And you build a community first, and then you can figure out sort of the right way to address their needs, because you learn a lot from them when you engage. Mm-hmm. But interestingly, we didn't initially package everything under this concept of the next CMO. In fact, we had a different sort of brand approach. It was a little bit wonkier. In fact, Scott reeled against it. And when he joined full-time as the CMO, he fixed that. But we initially had sort of a newsletter strategy, and it was called the Marketing Nerds Letter. And it was sort of a very wonky, kind of nerdy kind of approach to marketing. In fact, it's probably why my Twitter handle is still NerdCMO, right? It's sort of a nod to the wonky kind of analytical side of marketing. But the big aha that we had is after we launched the first version of our product in 2019, the initial intent was that, hey, this is going to be a PLG strategy. We're going to have this free version of the product out there and people are just going to, use it for free and then decide, hey, they're going to upgrade to a paid version when they see all the value as they get their plans up and running. What we realized when we had thousands of people sign up for this thing as soon as we got it out in the wild. So we knew, wow, there was a big need for this idea, but then people struggled. And some of it might have been, the product probably wasn't perfect back then. But when we really started talking to people, we realized that they actually needed help and they needed advice to figure out how to build a plan. And that's when, Scott and I and Dan at the time, who was our CTO, really put our heads together and said, how are we going to do this? Because we can't expect to just build it and not only are they going to come, but they're going to be super successful. And we realized we had a lot of work to do and a big opportunity and a responsibility to educate. So that's what really kicked it into high gear. And Scott came up with the idea of writing a book to be sort of our centerpiece. And maybe, I don't know, Scott, if you want to talk about the origin in your history with books, because that was the thing that I think really professionalized our content at a different level.
Yeah, I think when you have a very complex technology and you have a technology that needs methodology associated with it, you know, that's always important to have a point of view, right? And I think what we found is that as our product got more complex, because the needs associated with budgeting included a lot of planning elements, and then people wanted to be able to measure those successes that they had and make sure that the budget is being optimized, we needed to come up with a point of view so that people could start to apply it. And also it fed into a great strategy of helping people understand the problem. What we found is that actually there were a lot of marketers out there that didn't even understand what the problem was. You know, they didn't understand that not having a plan going into the year was kind of a problem. Not having goals was kind of a problem. Just doing random acts of marketing, as Peter said, where you're basically just doing channel-based marketing, that was not really all that satisfying. Not knowing what the ROI is on your marketing is kind of pointless, right? You're reporting on impressions and leads, and nobody at the company knows what the value of that is. So we created, you know, a book that takes you through the whole process, what the problem is, and defining that problem, understanding, you know, how to build a plan by setting your goals, creating your strategies, applying your campaigns, understanding how to allocate budget, manage and optimize it through the year, and then really looking at what that return was. And so that became the focal point with the book. Now, we were shocked to see that, you know, over 40,000 public are in circulation right now of the book, but, you know, people have enjoyed it and it's kicked off a community that now we have over 6,500 members of marketing leaders that participate in it regularly. We kicked off a workshop series now where people can come and get education, their certification associated with it, and a variety of different topics that are related to the product. And so this dynamic of being, you know, having good solid education and methodology, understanding the problems, and then being able to automate it to the with the product worked very well for us. And so that's where the book came into play. And then everything kind of got named around the Next CMO community. The Peter's Runner podcast is over 100 episodes now, and we have over 200 blog posts. So the content is rich. The community is active, and hopefully, you know, people are starting to really understand the problem and be able to solve it.
And I think there are a couple of things about that that are really important, by the way, just to add on to what Scott was saying. There were a couple of things that were critical for the success of this initiative. One is that it had to be good. So you see a lot of content programs where people throw stuff together. I mean, today they'd go to ChatGPT and say, hey, give me some content. And it really has to be thoughtful and well-researched. And we put a lot of pain and effort into making sure that the book was deeply grounded from our experience. We fought about a lot of things and really wrestled through the content to make sure that it was right. And the second thing is it had to be non-promotional. So it had to be authentic. And the first thing we wanted to focus on was educating and creating valuable content that the audience that we were trying to reach ultimately was going to connect with. And that's why literally the book does not have the word Planet in it outside the bios of the authors. That was really it, because it's meant to be a what it is, which is a guide to how a contemporary marketing executive could lead the function. And then the third thing was really about targeting, where I love the idea of the Next CMO, because the Next CMO not only speaks to the contemporary CMO in the world, but also the aspiring CMO. And because those people are really important for our message, because these are people who are the most ambitious people who are literally going to be the next CMO. And we want to make sure that we're educating and supporting them as part of our content strategy, because we know they're going to have huge influence in the future in the companies that they're part of.
Yeah, I want to touch a little bit and continue to go deeper on So I love the next CMO, the aspirational part of that. A, as a CMO myself, it's like, I don't want to be the old CMO, right? I want to be the future iteration of what a CMO needs to continuously become. And where I loved the book when I first picked it up was the word educate has been used by both of you a couple of times here, right? Was how practical and pragmatic every chapter was. You know, the way that it's structured in terms of, you know, every chapter has a very specific topic and how rich and deep each topic goes into. I think it is the guide for someone. What does a CMO need to do and how do they need to think? So firstly, congrats to both of you. And obviously Dan, the other author, it is a fantastic practical guide. And as I go to events now and show off the product and continue to evangelize the brand, I hear from so many people saying, I love that book. It helps me all the time. I've got sticky notes all through it. And that is a testament to the education inside of it. Why, like, you could have done a lot of things with a book and going down that deep, rich educational experience, like, you didn't take any shortcuts in doing that. Explain, A, the rationale and the strategy behind that, because I think that is one of the biggest takeaways that I've had learning from both of you is, hey, like, you can put out content for content's sake, but the value and the depth that the next CMO has gone to is a step beyond where most go.
Yeah, and I think that came from a couple of places. You know, one is, you know, Scott spent a lot of time in his career as an educator. You know, he was a marketing professor for many years and hopes to go back to that someday, hopefully not in the not too distant future. And so he really brought that pedagogical kind of approach to how we do it, right? So how do you actually comprehensively cover a topic and teach it? So I really give a lot of credit to Scott as the architect for a lot of the way that we put the content together. And the other thing that I've seen a lot in my career is that the best content programs are really deep and sincere. And if you invest the time to make it right, it can last for a long time. And what we've done here is we've merchandised the content and this approach into a lot of different things. And when I was in my last CMO gig, we made healthcare technology and we did a lot of content. And the content actually came from, we had on staff about a dozen medical doctors. And we saw that when you had really deep content that came from someone who's very credible in the domain, and that's one of the things we all brought to the party is that we're deep in the domain, then it's much more valuable over time. And it's got huge lasting power. And that's what we've seen with this content.
Scott, as the crazy professor behind this, anything to add?
Oh, I mean, the great thing about content, I think, just in general, is that, look, in B2B, a lot of people are looking to understand things, right? You know, it's difficult. B2B marketing is incredibly difficult to do well. You know, I started my career out in B2C. It was a lot more straightforward. You had a lot more control over a lot of different elements of the business. And, you know, I think when you start looking at creating a content strategy that Peter mentioned, you know, you have to have it, you know, solid, good quality educational things that people can apply. I mean, the thing in our product, in the book, is that there are actual templates that people can apply. But also for people that are looking to build a content strategy, the great thing is if you start with a large content asset, it can create your whole entire content strategy, right? You have a book, you can break the chapters into ebooks, you can break the chapters into blog posts, and you can create an entire year's worth of content out of one content asset. So for those of you that are looking to create a content strategy, start with large content assets, put a lot of time and energy into it. And then on the other side of it, you can start to chunk those pieces up and start to create a groundswell. And repeating those same messages over and over again is critical. I think too many marketers today try to create unique content all the time. They go outside of their zone. Right, you got to be creating content that's relevant to the problem you're trying to solve. And so the book is relevant to what the Planful for Marketing product does. It solves very specific problems around planning, budgeting, and ROI. And that's what the book carries those messages across so they can be applied to the product. So everybody that has products like that, they should be looking to tie the content directly into what their expertise is and the product that they offer.
So here's the other thing on top of that was really valuable about this approach we took with the book is that it actually was our roadmap. So when we wrote the book, we started the company from what Scott and I had developed over decades of being marketing executives as our view and sort of the right way and the best practices to do this at scale. And we realized that there wasn't really a system out there. People cobbled together a bunch of different things, or there were a bunch of tools people use that did part of what marketing was. But when it came to running a marketing function, there wasn't really a platform to do that. And we agreed that sort of the spine of this thing was the plan and the money that you use to apply against that plan. And so that's where it started. And it's incredibly valuable to, one, really write down in an incredibly detailed way what you think the right answer is. How are we going to do this? Because what it does is it makes the product a lot better, because it's the product will use the book all the time. You know, the product team will be flipping through the book saying, well, how do we do this here? How do we do that? What are we saying we're going to do this? And it makes sure that so many products are built to basically make bad practices happen faster. But the reality is that if you build a product based on well-researched, thoughtful, grounded practices that all hang together, then you're going to have a better end experience with the product. So that was hugely valuable for us in a way that, again, it's all about its company strategy, its content strategy, its product, it's all integrated together.
Yeah, I think the thing that I took away from the book was it was the one piece that has really kind of taken every disparate part of marketing and said, well, this is how you put it all together, right? This is how you kind of glue all of these things together. Because as you go in your marketing career, you know, you'll become a great individual contributor either in, you know, demand gen, product marketing, corporate marketing, somewhere you're in IC, and then you become a leader of a department or a function. And then next thing you know, you're running the whole department and you're like, oh, how does all of this work together, right? You've seen it from the sidelines and in your peer group, but no one's ever taught you how to run the whole thing in one cohesive strategy. And so, you know, it's a shortcut into kind of how to think about running the whole function as its own discipline. And that was the power for me of the book. I think inside of that, there's a lot of great educational content on the other areas that, you know, marketers just don't grow up being great at. Not many people in marketing have an accounting degree. And it takes you through some of those core concepts so that you can understand the conversations that you're having with your peers now as the leader of a function about revenue forecasting, about, you know, cash-based accounting or accrual-based accounting. All of those concepts are in the book and help you then say, oh, that's why we do these things these ways. So that for those that are listening and haven't read the book, go and read it. How did the book then lead to the podcast and ultimately to the community? How did that concept and those strategies evolve under the Next CMO brand?
Well, we knew that we had something with the book. In fact, the way we built the book, again, was I give Scott all the credit to, one, coming up with the idea of we got to write a book, and then two, the approach that we use. So he talked about sort of the deconstruction of the book where we merchandise the pieces after. But we actually built the book by writing a series of blog posts. So basically what we did is we said, hey, we need to write a book in about 6 months. And it's all us, right? So there was no outside writers. It was literally all us. So what we did is we got ourselves in a room for a couple of days and said, and hammered out the outline of the book, and then just said, who's going to write this? Who's going to write? And that became our content calendar for the next several months. So we built this thing up, and it was a great way to do it. because when we publish stuff in advance, you could see what people connected with. And it got us really excited because people were immediately connecting with some of the content, but it also allowed you to tweak it. So we didn't literally take a bunch of blog posts and just stitch them together. We used it as sort of the core content, and there's a lot of work in editing it to make it all flow and come together. But that's how the book came up. But when we were writing it, it was just really clear that there was a huge response. And like you said, it's funny. It reminded me of the way you and I met, Rowan. We met through a mutual friend by the name of Dave Gerhart and on what's now called Exit 5, which is his community. And he talks a lot about the fact, his big saying is, no one ever went to school for B2B marketing. And he really addresses how do you be a marketer in his content. But even more, no one ever went to school to be a marketing leader, right? No one teaches you this as it all comes together. So we knew we had a resonant piece of content. And I'm a big believer in merchandising an idea across multiple channels. So we said, how do we make this go further? And so we brainstormed all the different ways we could do it. And we came up with a whole bunch of channels. And in fact, the one thing that we didn't do, you know, was part of the strategy. So we did a podcast and we did the community. And the one thing that we didn't do that we wanted to is actually do live in-person events and in live in-person courses. And we didn't because of the pandemic. But if there was no pandemic, we actually would have had in-person kind of events because we saw as part of this that the idea of sort of this community element was really huge. People wanted to talk about this. They wanted to learn from others. They wanted to discuss these topics more. So that was, we thought, something that we really needed to lean into.
And we've actually started doing that, right? We had the Plan for User Conference, 2 months ago now, a month ago. And that was, Scott was doing some fantastic live in-person workshops in Chicago. And for those listening, we'll continue to do those back in person now and obviously continue with a lot of the online content as well. So let's talk about that, the acquisition. I know we've talked about it in a number of different ways, but so from your perspective, why was Planful the partner that you wanted to work with?
It was super obvious to me. And, you know, when I went about the process of looking to merge the company with something else, because I knew that was what we were going to do for us to, we realized to solve the problem in a more fulsome way, we needed either a lot more capital or we needed to be part of something bigger. And in the right strategy at that point was to be part of something bigger. It was just painfully obvious to me that really leaning in to the financial performance side was the way it was going to work for a couple of reasons. One is that one of the things that people resonated with most in all of our content, definitely they connect with the idea of sort of goals and alignment and campaign strategies, putting that all together. There's this huge gap, though, in a lot of marketing teams in general was depth in really understanding the financial side of the business. And I'm a huge believer that the future CMO will be quite financially literate. And having that connection will be incredibly differentiating. And having met you, Rowan, before and some other senior leaders from Planful, it just seemed like the most obvious thing. And the funny thing was, you know, I was going off and it's like doing any investor thing. You go kiss a bunch of frogs and you see which one is going to be a prince. And sorry for the graphic there, Rowan. And you were literally one of the first people I reached out to because, you know, you and I had met before. I knew this was the right connection. And we reached out. And what did you tell me? You said, God, yeah, we got to talk about this, but I've got Perform coming up. If you remember correctly.
Yeah, I did.
Can you wait? And I'm like, dude, I'm busy. I've got to get going on this. So I started talking to all these other people, had all this other interest in the thing. And then you guys came back from Perform, as you said, and it just was such an obvious fit, I think, when we got together and you and I and Dan Fletcher, Planful CFO, just immediately said, oh my God, this is the right thing. We got to figure out how to make it work. And we actually put the entire deal together and closed in record time. I think it took 90 days, which was incredible for this kind of thing.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, what you mentioned was the financial literacy of CMOs and how that really is a lot of the future of where we need to go. I saw a stat recently, I forget who actually put it out there, but, you know, the number one gap for marketing professionals and marketing leaders right now is not enough budget, not enough resources, right? Who can help us solve that problem is the CFO. And the second part of that slide was, where are marketing's priorities right now and who do we have the deepest relationships with? And the CFO was last on the list. So Scott, I want to talk to you. You've worked with a lot of CFOs. As we think about the CMO and CFO alignment, what about the acquisition really changes in your mind as we talk about financial performance management being a team sport?
Well, I mean, as of right now, you have CFOs that constantly will ask the head of marketing, like, how are we doing? And you'll see that the marketers will turn around and say, well, I created 8,000 leads. And like, well, what's the value of a lead? I don't know. What's the ROI on this stuff? I don't know. And what you find over and over again is that the CFOs just don't trust their CMOs. There's no trust there. I mean, we see stats out there that, you know, only 24% of CEOs trust their CMO. I would love to see a survey out there how many CFOs trust their CMO. I mean, because they're spending money and, you know, there has to be fiscal responsibility for that. And, you know, marketers have been getting away by just kind of saying, I don't know. But here's the problem is that on the flip side, if they could show the ROI, they would see their budgets start to increase, right? I had the luxury of talking to 12 CFOs a while ago. And I said, if marketing could show you gross margin adjusted ROI of say 3X on every dollar that they spent, what would their budget be? And the first CFO said, in theory, unlimited, right? And this is the friction, right? It's because marketing can't show it, they don't trust it. So they have to cap it, because if they're blowing their money, then you're actually just losing money, right? Because revenue is great, but there's margins associated with it. And it's so you're basically throwing cash out the window. And this is the type of fiscal discipline. Peter mentioned it earlier, right? This is the type of fiscal discipline that needs to be put in place for marketers. They have the largest discretionary spend of anybody at most companies. And so it has to be spent properly. And when spent properly, it's amazing how much they can move the business. And I always say this to marketers, you know, why do you not want to see how you're doing? It's like playing a game of basketball and say, we're just going to track how many passes we make. We're not going to track the ball going in the net. We're not going to find out who won, right? But if you could say, you know, look at all the wins that I had, then you're going to find a partner in the CFO. The other thing that, you know, the CFO and the CMO really need to start working on is planning up front. You see too many marketers like hiding in the background, you know, creating their plan in a bubble. Go talk to the CFO and build that together. Set those goals, those financial goals. Show how the money is going to be spent, and you'll get a partner. And when these two audiences partner together, there's going to be magic at companies. And you have a, you know, a partner that, you know, if you have big ideas in the future, that they'll be supportive of those big ideas at trying to drive the business. And if you don't have that alignment, you're going to still have this friction, and you're actually hurting the business overall. So this is exciting about these two products coming together, having that visibility, planning from the financial side, planning from the marketing side, now fully integrated. Now we have this business view as opposed to just a marketing and a finance view.
100% agree. I think what you talked about there was, you know, marketers spend a lot of time talking to CFOs about their operational metrics and not about their commercial or their financial metrics. And the objective of this joint merged company is that, hey, like, we need to, as marketers, know all of our operational metrics inside and out, right? That's our job. Sales leader knows their operational metrics inside and out. But finance don't talk in those terms. They talk in commercial and financial outcomes. And this joint offering, this merged entity, Planful, is all about helping businesses A, plan and build driver-based plans that might be either operational or commercial, but then record and manage and track all the financial processes and the financial metrics within the business. And when you can do that, you can reduce a lot of the friction on the finance side. Whatever your company objectives are, you can accelerate them, whether that's growth, whether that's profit. Being on the same page from that business strategy perspective is just so important. Peter, what other advantages, as you were evaluating, where do I want to partner and bring the planner business to the fore? Were there other advantages outside of kind of synergies of name? You know, we only had to change two letters. So obviously the CMO and CFO relationship was there, but what about product gaps that maybe Planner couldn't fulfill in under its umbrella? And what were you thinking from that perspective?
Yeah, there were a lot of synergistic opportunities. And there are a lot of ways that you evaluate the right partner for an acquisition, in our case, a sale. And, you know, one of them is sort of the product gaps. The other is the target market. You know, the other is the potential of this company that is going to be basically the vessel that you're going to sit your company inside over a period of time. So all those things are really important to consider. And all of that stuff was really well aligned and super excited. So we knew that Planful was a super successful company, you know, backed by great investors, growing like a weed, and very focused on the same kinds of companies that we were focused on at Plana. So that meant that we had really good alignment. And on the product gap side, we knew there were a whole bunch of things that we needed to do better. One was really deeper in real-time kind of financial reporting. How do we really connect in real-time with sort of the big plan for the overall company financial plan with the specialized version of that plan that the marketers need to operate with? So that specific thing in getting that real-time connection was incredibly important. The second thing is there were some big ideas that we had that we just did not have the resources to get to at this point. So some of the things I'm really excited about is the idea of leveraging some of the really AI-based features inside Planful, like the idea of coming up with these insights and warnings and triggers to say, oh my God, something is happening. And in really getting sort of leaning into the future of kind of generative AI and in saying, well, let me figure out how to take everything that's in here and create an output that is human readable more than just data tables so that we can communicate this in a more interesting way. There are all these great ideas that we had and we just didn't have the resources to get it done. So with a company that was very well resourced because it was very financially successful, much bigger than us, growing really quicker, and also had the right kind of synergistic alignment with where we were going, all that stuff came together to one, it was just the painfully obvious decision where we needed to go. And two, it was, in my mind, the perfect marriage to solve the problem in the way that Scott and I wanted to solve it from the beginning. We wanted to solve this in a bigger, more holistic way. We're trying to always shrinking the problem because we had limited resources. With more resources and with this fantastic foundation of Planful for Finance, we have the opportunity to solve this problem the way that we think it deserves to be solved for our customers.
And there's a huge number of adjacent opportunities as well. So things that I talk to a lot of CMOs about is, oh yeah, like we really need help working with our accounting team separate to our FP&A team. And some of the accounting capabilities that we're going to connect is going to be huge and free up huge amounts of accounting resource time and marketing resource time. Additionally, you know, working with HR teams, right? A common scenario for marketing leaders is, do I go and get an agency for this or do I go and hire internally? All those what if modeling assumptions about those, answering those questions around resourcing can be done. And then the what if scenarios around planning. So modeling all of that analysis, connecting it into a sales forecast, bringing in your pipeline data and augmenting your predicted ROI. So there's a huge opportunity and a huge universe of things to come when we have the two platforms merged together, which we're doing right now. And so really exciting to free up a lot of the, you know, I would say they're secondary or tertiary processes that impact a marketing team, but they create a lot of friction. They slow you down as you're trying to solve for them because they're on the edges. And as you can solve them, you really free up the time to run fast as a marketing org, which is ultimately what the vision of Planner and the next CMO has always been about. How does marketing teams run fast and execute at their best?
Yeah, and Scott brought up the right point, which is trust. And if you can become ultimately part of a single collaborative system of record for the way that you plan and operate your business, with specialized version for marketing, specialized versions for finance, specialized version for people planning and accounting, whatever it is, then you just get much more trust. And with better trust, better visibility, better agility, you're going to go faster. And that's super exciting for us to start to see this division come to fruition here with the combination. So we're super excited about it.
Well, I know I'm the host of this conversation today. So number one, I want to thank Peter and Scott for being guests on the next CMO. This is probably weird for you, Peter.
A little bit, but that's okay.
And also, I want to thank them for the community, the content. You know, it has helped me in my career, and I know many others out there who constantly talk to me and they're like, oh, you know, you guys have the next CMO. What a great book. I read it all the time. It's dog-eared. It's got notes all through it. So from the community to both of you, thank you. And Peter, what's next for the next CMO?
Well, we've got a lot on the next CMO path. We're going to continue the podcast, obviously. We'll continue with the great content we've done before. The community is thriving. So we're expecting great things out of the next CMO. And so there's a lot more to come.
Yeah. So from the planful perspective, we're going to absolutely continue everything that we have, you know, acquired or merged with from the next CMO and the Planner team. We've got a great vision ahead for this community, for this podcast, for the community itself. And, you know, keep looking for more from us. There's a lot more to come, and we're excited about continuing the journey that Scott and Peter started and taking it to the next step.
Great. And so now I'll wrestle control back, Rowan, so we can wrap up the way that we always do. So Rowan, thank you so much for being our special guest host today. Thanks for being a great partner through this entire process and being a great shepherd for this. Scott, thanks for being here, being a friend from the beginning and being the architect for all of the good stuff that came out of the next CMO that really has Scott's fingerprints all over it. So he was there. And if you haven't had a chance to see one of Scott's courses, there's a reason he was has consistently voted one of the most popular professors at University of Massachusetts, because he's really great at doing that. But with that, if you have ideas for future episodes of the next CMO, send them along to us at thenextcmo@planful.com. Make sure you follow us on all those social media things. And thank you both for being part of this special episode. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. See ya.
Thanks, Peter.
Bye-bye.
Pod Forte Podcast.